step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance 358. I'm Nicole Shiro with co-host Bob Tolero and guest engineer Tracy Schultz. You're listening to KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 and KOOP.org. Each week we take a look at theater from many angles. If it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah. Look at history, open the books. There are statues with great looks. There are gods.
Today it's Wednesday, April 27, 2016. Today we have a very exciting and packed day. We have The Tempest with the Vortex Theater. We also have Austin Shakespeare with Macbeth. And we're speaking with Shantae Carmel from Motown the Musical. But of course, we will have lively discussions, including the news and views from the world of theater in Austin, New York, and beyond. Stay tuned. Can you guys take a guess what that was from?
Go ahead.
American Psycho.
Of course.
Because I'm a little obsessed. Well, actually, I did try to find original music for the other openings, and that London version of American Psycho is the only thing out there. So I'm sorry, Waitress and Tuck Everlasting.
Yeah. And you Fully had Committed nothing, doesn't have any.
Fully
music.
Committed doesn't have any, and they didn't have anything for me to play. So, so hello, Bob. I'm checking
hello,
in
dear.
With you. Thank you for...
hello out there in Radio Land.
Yes, thank you for coming back and joining us.
My pleasure.
Yay. And Tracy?
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in and engineering again and for, as always, another lovely hour of Remix.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
I love the Tracy Schultz, and I do love that show because you make mixtapes stay alive.
Yeah.
There you go, Tracy.
And I still have my box of cassette tapes and mixtapes. I will not get rid of them.
No, they may be collectible someday. It's Willy Week.
I know. It is Willy Week. Just so everyone knows, it's Willy Week. Our two favorite Willies, Shakespeare and Nelson, both share birthdays this week. And today is a Shakespeare-y kind of show. So it's Willy Week here on Offstage and On the Air. So since we have a lot of guests and I want to get through it, I'm going to cut news kind of a little short, but we did have 4 Broadway openings and 2 off-Broadway openings, and I'm just going to hit the Broadways right now. Lisa and I can go over a little bit of them more later, but next week. But American Psycho opened. And you know what? I'm going to say it. All 4 of these shows, kind of when we go to our Did He Like It,
right.
All 4 of the shows were all over the map with big smiley happy faces, thumbs up, to a womp womp, to a thumbs down. Blech. So it really kind of was all over the map. I'm going to focus on the cruddy review that Ben Brantley did for American Psycho. Because I need to let Ben Brantley know, you need to read the book before you write a review. He really just couldn't stop talking about the chiseled features and physiques of the people in the show. So he wrote, the very beginning though is kind of funny. So while the show's title character, played by Benjamin Walker in an admirably disciplined performance, see again, he doesn't know Patrick Bateman is disciplined. Come on now. He takes a gleaming axe or a chainsaw to his co-stars. You may find yourself fixating on the following questions. Collectively, how many hours of gym time per week does the incredibly buff cast embody? More than that of the acrobats of Cirque du Soleil, whose Paramore opens on Broadway next month? Did those auditioning for American Psycho have to submit ab shots instead of headshots? And before they set foot on stage each night, are they required to pass a body mass index test? And when I read, that was the second paragraph, I was like, well, buddy, I know where this one's going.
Right.
Then he wrote, if such queries do indeed fill your head during the long and decoratively gory duration of American Psycho, then it could be argued that the show's creators have done their job. I'm like, okay. He was all over the map. It made me really laugh. He really did like the music. I mean, Duncan Sheik, come on, you rock.
Can't go wrong.
He said it's steeped in the electric throb of period synth pop while incorporating top 40 numbers like Tears for Fears, Human League, Phil Collins, Huey Lewis, and the News. Well, again, I don't think he read the book because those are all references throughout the entire. I'm like, he does not know the story.
Even the movie. You know.
Even the movie, I know.
The play should stand on its own.
Yes, oh. I understand.
You have to read American Psycho to go see the music.
No, but the whole basis. Book is, you know, the book is about capitalism, the 80s, how we changed, being vain,
and narcissism.
All these things where if you haven't read the book or movie, you kind of know the themes, and yet he's perplexed by the narcissism. So I don't know. It makes me kind of laugh. But he just said there are so many perfectly toned carcasses headed for mortuary slabs. Who cares if they're dismembered sooner rather than later? And no carcass is more spectacularly toned than Mr. Walker's, which is just as well since he spends much of the second act in nothing but bloodstained natch tidy whities. But let's just make it clear, he's not another pretty six-pack. As he goes on and on, I was laughing. So he says it's neither sexy nor scary, but the show is in which he appears. This may be good news for concerned citizens who feared the musical might present a nasty, irresistible role model to impressionable youngins. Not to worry. In American Psycho, there's little that's lusty and bloodlust. I did finally find a still of the decapitation scene that
I didn't see it.
It's on. Yeah, I'll have to pull it up and show you. It's pretty gnarly. I was kind of blown away. I don't know. I think it looks fascinating. I think I'm getting up there in a week, and I will go.
Well, then you can do
a retraction
of his review.
I will. Yes. And the comments are hilarious. People got really angry on the Times and were like yelling at him.
That means it'll be a cult thing and it'll replace.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, here's the thing. Waitress also opened. A lot of my friends went and saw this. Love Jesse Mueller. Every single person I know who has seen it has been, it was good. Place smells like pie.
Right.
It's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So they did. They brought a pie consultant in and made everyone how to teach. Right. They have pies, fresh baked pies baked every day.
So you smell pies.
Smell pies, which you should. You're in a diner.
Good, but yeah. I could do that by going to a pie shop.
Exactly.
Well, that's true.
Exactly. Well, so for folks who don't know, Sarah, and I love that all these musicians are doing musicals because I just think art is art. And so Sarah Bareilles did the music for it. She got really good notices on her music, actually, for this show. But I don't know if you've ever seen, this was based off of Movie Waitress with Carrie Russell. Right. It's kind of a boring movie. So I was like, really? But and they brought it up in here, too. Sugar, butter, flour. The words are crooned like a lullaby intermittently throughout the musical, bringing a warm blanket of comfort to the troubled central character. Baking pies for the diner where she also puts on an apron to wait tables. I mean, it's just not an exciting storyline. you know, I'm sorry. I'm jaded today. I'm really jaded today. I just want folks to know these are my personal opinions and are not those of KOOP or anyone else in this room. And I wish Lisa Sheps was here because, Lisa Sheps, I miss you and you're back next week. Woo! Even though I love the Bob Tolero and everyone here. But Lisa and I would be arguing over this, which would make it more fun. So so they actually said that her Jesse Mueller's talent often outstrips the material she's given here. So they said the score is appealing. It draws on the sounds of country music reflecting on a southern setting. But it really has a more traditional Broadway pop balladry. They said the book is a little flat, and it flattens out most of the characters in the comic cartoons, and then thank God for Isherwood. To be fair, they don't have much more depth in the movie from which the musical's dialogue is borrowed. So at least he was on that one. But they said that Sarah Bareilles really shows an unexpected flair for the comic songs. And there's a great, joyous hootenanny for Miss Fitzgerald. So if I had nothing to do and someone said, hey, do you want tickets? I'd be like, sure, but not on the top of my list. Then again, that's me. Tuck Everlasting.
I know.
Now, I normally love the Peanuts shows. Not interested.
Not interested.
But I do think visually, production-wise, even with the simplistic of production, people haven't tried to Shazam it like a Julie Taymor and have gone back to simplicity. But man, it's been so stunning lately on even on shows that I haven't been excited about. So this looks pretty. it really does. This one was all over the map. Thumbs up, happy, blech. So here's what this sentence made me laugh. Isherwood, family-friendly musicals on Broadway generally come in just one flavor, flashy. I was like, well, that's true. Directed by Casey Nicklaw, who did the Razzle Dazzly Aladdin, the really vulgar Book of Mormon, I mean, all over the map, and then went to Tuck Everlasting. I found that a very interesting director, but and didn't he do? He did Something Rotten too, didn't he?
I think he did. So.
I think he was a Something Rotten kind of guy too. It says that they really really liked it. You can feel the delight in getting to the flex of the muscle most often used, and it evinces a natural feel for the tender emotional core of the material, and even its layers of mildly dark philosophical inquiry. Yes. I did just use the phrase philosophical inquiry in reference to a Broadway musical aimed at a family crowd. That made me laugh. They said he thought it was good. And it's a pretty complex story. It's based on the children's book. And oh my goodness, Natalie Babbitt wrote the book. You know what? I couldn't get into the movie either. Did anyone like the movie in here or read the book? No, I got a lot of heads going, no.
Get some thumbs down.
David Bosch just gave me the thumbs down. Yeah, like David. The little bleh on the fence.
No, it's not bad.
But if you got a niece, you know who's in it? Terrence Mann.
I don't even care about Terrence Mann.
Oh, I love Terrence Mann too. But yes, Ben King. I do love Ben Kingsley also. Terrence Mann got a really nice shout out. He is playing the man in the yellow suit.
Oh, he's playing the Ben Kingsley role. Okay, that I care about. I thought you were saying he was in the movie. I was like, I do not remember.
No. Terrence Mann in the musical. Okay.
By far the most interesting character.
So, well, Terrence Mann apparently did it well, and Terrence seems to be an interesting man, so yes. I'm not afraid. They said that the cat, they said it was, I don't know. It was a blah. But then, actually, the one that got the most thumbs up and wasn't actually all over the board was Jesse Tyler Ferguson in Fully Committed. And just the picture of him going, it makes me...
Wild. I think he plays 30?
40 different characters. More
well,
than
he had
four.
Some criticism from the time.
He had one. From the time. It wasn't bad.
Well, I read the Times.
Yeah, I have it in my hand right here.
So my understanding is vocally, he just didn't handle it.
Yeah, but it wasn't a bad... No one panned him.
If you're going to pay money to see one man do all these roles, and the Times says his voices aren't that distinct...
Yeah, well, the Times didn't understand what American Psycho is about, so you know they're not.
They didn't read the book,
right now, so
yeah.
I guess they forgot the '80s in our vainness. but they did actually. The Times complained about the ticket price, which I'm like, no one complained about $350 for a 90-minute one-person show for Neil Patrick Harris with Hedwig. This was Isherwood. All these were Isherwood, except for Psycho was Ben Brantley. Mm-hmm. And I thought it says the production's top ticket price is $147, nearly $300 for a pair in the aisle for a 90-minute show. Is not exactly comparable to a $3,000 dinner for four, but it's uncomfortably close. But here's my thing. Hedwig was 90 minutes, and it was $350. And no one complained about that.
Well, maybe they should.
Well, just saying. That was my point.
I would rather see Hedwig.
Thank you. Me too. And well, I did. I was that idiot that paid it, but whatever.
Well, Huey was another, was it 45 minutes?
That is another really short
play,
one.
100 plus.
So, well, I don't know.
If they're talking about length and it's like how much you were paying for your ticket, it's like for the length, that's one thing. But if
I think it's good, no matter if it's 3 hours or four.
Yeah, content is content.
That's true.
And it's the Times talking about prices on tickets on Broadway. And I was like going, isn't that a little lowbrow?
I didn't think 147 was that crazy.
It's not low.
I don't know. It just seems like it's
I think the last, you know what? I'm like, what was the last straight play I saw was The River with Hugh Jackman. Actually, I was shocked because my Hugh Jackman tickets for Hugh Jackman on Broadway were almost, I'm not even going to say how much they were, a ticket. A lot, more than Hedwig. And these were only $90 for The River, and I was in the second row. So, and I think the straight play before that I saw was Casa Valentina. I paid $147 a ticket. Mm-hmm.
But and don't let me you tell love you how it's like only 90? Like your whole brain gets
I know, yeah. I know. We've been
I don't know.
Manipulated a bit.
But, yeah. And today's Jaded Wednesday. So
I'm blaming it on the Schubert, y'all. Whenever you're ready to discuss this, I'm blaming it all on the Schubert.
That's right. It's those landlords.
It's on there. Well, they said, here's where your voice. Sentence came in. He has a wonderfully pliant voice that allows him to change personas within seconds, sometimes less, as he gives us both the sides of tense, terse conversation. But
you know what? I think it's Terry Teachout that I read.
Yeah, because I was like, this is
do the voices.
Not a bad review. Here, no, I'll let you read it.
Positive.
So
yeah.
We will put all those reviews and get it up there. I just had two little note pieces. I actually got a chance to go to the Texas Cultural Arts. They do the Texas Medal for the Arts twice a year, which we will be having next February. But they also do a thing called the Young Masters Program, where they go through students all over the United States in fine arts academies and performing arts high schools, homeschools, and basically 15 different kids in dance, visual, music, theater, and they give some of them scholarships and they give them awards. And Monday night was the event. Ray Benson and Juliet Brandon were the hosts. Holland Taylor spoke, Cecilia Abbott. I have to say, shout out to my alma mater, Booker T. Washington, David Boss the same way. David, we wiped those awards.
Did you really?
And I leaned over and I go, I went to high school there. So this Jersey girl was proud to have lived in Texas as a child. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. And I love seeing the future. And those Peterson brothers played, man. I'm sad that Prince was gone, but I'm beside myself. Let's get a grip. But when you see folks like the Peterson brothers that are 16 and 17-year-old playing, you see bands like Charlie Bell that are brother and sister and they're 15, and let's say Jendaya just turned 18. Jackie Vinson just turned 21. And you see these kids playing, you realize there is a future and we don't have to be so sad that, wow. So shout out to that.
Yeah, it's great.
I just wanted to say, Texas Commission on the Arts.
Texas Commission for the Arts. Thank you. I can't believe it's
there's
only
also
Wednesday.
The Texas Cultural Trust. I mean, there's all the, but this is, yeah, you know, I've done the judging thing, so I know, but it's TCA.
They had 225 submissions, I think they said this year. But I don't know. I was impressed. My school wiped it up. Quickly have to give a shout out to Francesco Aniele. He is an understudy at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. He was backstage in the green room in his sneakers and his shirt. And the tenor in the lead in the opera lost his voice in the second act. And they put a cape on Francisco and stuck him out on stage.
Do you know the opera?
I forgot. I didn't write it down. I don't have time. Like, we're going to... I want to get to you guys and having moments. So I just was like, Francisco, get a shout out. I cut all the other news. He came on. They have video and pictures of him. He's taking a bow with his sneakers and his jeans.
What?
They all had only had time to put a cape on him. So he stood to the side of the stage and sang. And the actor who lost his voice continued to do the motion, but it was in the middle of the second act.
I love
and man,
stories.
He was all over the news. Everyone has picked him up in Australia. And I'm just like, Francisco, you go, buddy. So on the note of Prince, I can't not talk about Prince. I think everybody was kind of affected in their own different way. It's been a really rough year artistically, but The Color Purple did probably the best tribute I have seen or heard, and I'm just going to play it, and we're just going to let it go at that. Hello. We were all telling Prince stories back here. So I always said there are three musicians that should be or write a musical on Broadway. One was Bowie. Thank God we got Lazarus this year. Right. One was Prince and one is Justin Timberlake. And as my mother said to me, I started crying. First words I said, my mom called to make sure I'm okay. I'm like, he didn't make it to Broadway. And then this happened and I was like, well, he did make it to Broadway. And then my mom reminded me, there's a vault. I bet you something's in there. I'm surprised Purple Rain has never been a musical, but then I'm not surprised because he was so crazy about his rights and everything that I was like, that's never going to happen till later, but don't mark my words. I'll be first row in Purple Rain, the musical. So let's cut right into our first little guest here. I would like to welcome, I did not welcome everybody coming in. I'm so sorry. But I'm going to introduce you, Vortex peeps, and then we'll go around here. So, Andy, I didn't ask you, how do you pronounce your last name? Is it Agne?
Agne.
Agne? What is that? What nationality is
French
that?
French Swiss.
Oh,
even though I'm German.
Oh, you're German.
Family name
That's okay.
Is French Swiss.
That's, you know what? So, Andy Agne, you are the choreographer for this production, right?
Yes, and co-director.
Oh, exciting. And we also have David Boss and Olivia. Is it Jimenez?
Jimenez.
I can't pronounce anything today. I am sorry, Olivia. I am so sorry, but feel free to correct me. So, please tell us about this. This is kind of a really cool take on The Tempest. And what is it called? An aerial evening? Is that right?
An aerial tale,
yes. And it's aerial with the character.
And there's a pun within, of course.
Yes, I like the pun within it. So I'm going to say this is a take on Shakespeare's The Tempest, but being at the Vortex, we've changed it up a little bit.
We changed it up a lot. A few years back when Lorella Loftus and I were first doing a show together, we immediately connected and said at some point we're going to have to do a Shakespeare show that includes aerial acrobatics. So a few years went by and we finally sat together and we started planning. And so we decided we wanted to really work outside the box. So you're going to see a lot of new things. We added two characters that are not in the original play. And we added a lot of movement that are circus arts based.
Oh, that's kind of exciting. So, and there is some original music in the show also, correct?
Yes, Chet Salvato, who is a genius in my mind, has created the entire score from beginning to end with all sound cues, everything.
So is there singing also,
created.
Or...
It's the original songs that Shakespeare wrote, and we kind of played with them a little bit.
Awesome. I know you brought... Do you want to listen to a little bit of this music? I think... I don't know what the name of this track is, because Tracy has the...
It's called Ariel's Release.
Oh, Ariel's Release. Well, there you go. Okay, this is very mystical and magical and
absolutely
ethereal and all those wonderful things.
It is the vortex, no?
I was like, then again, I it is an elemental aspect, and we are at the vortex.
That is the music that accompanies my favorite moment in the show.
It is
beautiful.
I got to watch it last night. I snuck around. I was jaw on the floor.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, so how many people are in this cast?
18.
That's a large cast. And that's a large cast at the Vortex, too.
Vortex is used to big casts.
I don't know when was the last time. The last few shows, I feel like, have been small. No, I could be wrong. I thought they were smaller, but this is very, very, very exciting. So, David and Olivia, who do you play in this show?
I play Prospero.
Oh, well, you're making all the magic in the chaos.
I'm a wizard. Not really, but, you know.
I am really a wizard, but also I play Miranda, Prospero's daughter.
Well, you know, it's in the blood.
Sure.
So there you go. It's all good. So how is it? I know that you do Shakespeare a lot. So how is it going into a traditional Shakespeare, just doing text and language, and then going in and adding all these different elements with music and aerial and all these magical surprises that we aren't going to talk about on air? How does that feel? It's got to be a different experience.
Sure. I've been lucky enough to have been in The Tempest before with some person.
Another lady
place.
In the room?
Yes.
As Aunt Chicolella looks around, me?
So having been familiar with the play, I actually was actually cast a little later than a vast majority of the cast, and our co-director, Lorella, and who adapted the text, she sort of knew that I'm kind of come from a more traditional background and like we sort of just kind of talked about that in terms of, you know, how she's changing the text and all that sort of stuff. And there is a lot of original text still in there. Some of it has been changed from verse to prose, but a lot of the original verse is also there. You know, some of the speeches you just can't really get away with changing because they're
they're known. And,
yeah. So for that, I mean, the aerial stuff or the aerialists, they're so good at what they do. You just watch and
don't they make it look so easy? Like we could all just get up there and hang from the sky, conduct a little business.
I am
send a little email.
That's right. I get physically intimidated by
these have a cup of tea. You're like, oh yeah, no problem. I can do that.
And you know, and when you do a lot of Shakespeare, you know, you just know like a lot of music and you know sound cues, especially if you're doing histories and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of music is going to come in, and you know, there's songs in almost every Shakespeare play, so. You know, it wasn't that weird of an integration.
This is probably the first Shakespeare I've done since college. But I have worked in a lot of shows where we like to throw surprises at the audience. And so it was really exciting for me to see it all come together, especially since we weren't really able, even as actors and as the aerialists also able to see it come together until we were all in the space. So it's been...
Yeah, there's a lot of different moving pieces.
Yeah, it's been a pretty magical week so far.
Okay,
yeah,
well, I know
very
you...
complicated show.
I know you guys have a little scene prepared for us, but before we do that, Olivia, I'm going to give you a job.
All right.
Can you pick a number between 2 and 14?
7.
7. What is 7? Who?
Hello, I'm Norman Blumensaat, the Artistic Director of Different Stages, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM. 91.7 FM! I can't breathe.
Okay, that's so funny. We were just saying, Norman always pops up when Norman has a few different versions, and his always is on when Anne Ciccolella here, or... Norman is actually here. So, hello, Norman.
Hi,
we're shipping a shout out to you today.
I'll call you tomorrow.
Bob's going to give you a call. So, David, Olivia, you have a little scene prepared. Do you guys want to set this up for us?
Sure. So, as you might have guessed, The Tempest has a tempest in it. And that's how it starts, with the big storm that Prospero and his servant Ariel creates. And after that happens, you know, he causes a shipwreck, and he and his daughter have been stranded on an island for 12 years, and this is where we pick up.
If by your art, my dearest father, you have put the wild waters in this roar, allay them. I have suffered with those that I saw suffer. A brave vessel dashed all to pieces. The cry did knock against my very heart.
Be collected. No more amazement. Tell your piteous heart there's no harm done.
Poor souls, they perished.
No harm. I have done nothing but in care of thee. Thee, my dear one, thee, my daughter, who art ignorant of what thou art, not knowing of whence I am, nor that I am more better than Prospero, master of a full poor cell, nor thy greater father.
The storm has frightened me, father.
Wipe thine eyes. Be collected.
Wilt thou tell me a story, father, as thou used to do in my infancy?
There once was a child, not 3 years old.
Did the child have 4 or 5 women that tended on her?
That she did. How dost thou know this?
I know not. Perhaps I saw it in a dream.
Her father was the Grand Duke of Milan and a prince of power. Her mother was a piece of virtue. The child was the duke's only heir.
What happened to the child, father?
The duke had a brother, uncle to the child, called Antonio. But mark me, how perfidious was he. The duke loved him best in all the world, after his daughter, and put him to manage his state, which was the first in all the signories.
What did he do?
The duke had dignity without parallel, and the liberal arts were all his study. So wrapped in his studies was the duke that he cast the government of the state upon his brother. The uncle of the child proved to be false, and the state grew strangers. Officers that were true to the duke, he made his creatures.
Pray, continue, father.
He advanced those that would help him, and set all hearts in the state to what to him pleased his ear. The duke, neglecting worldly ends, and dedicated to the bettering of his mind, did not realize the evil nature awakened in his false brother. His trust had no limit. His brother was so lorded with his power and revenue that in actions he was the duke, showing an outward face of royalty. his ambition grew.
What happened then, Father? And what happens then is the rest of the show.
We'll find out.
Which, if folks wanted to find out more, that you are playing at the Vortex, and you do open this weekend, correct?
Yes, we open on Friday.
So, it was last night the first time you guys put all these different elements together?
There were rehearsals going back even a month where we're seeing sort of the aerialists sort of being inserted into certain scenes because you just kind of need them because there's text.
Well, all of a sudden there's a lady going, fly,
across. It's not exactly like, oh, here are actors and then an aerialist scene. It's a lot of integration.
Yeah, it's a lot of integration.
It's a lot of, you know, just putting pieces together. But there are times on stage where you have to, you know, sort of bring it in early on, which has been just beautiful to watch. Whatever this guy does to teach them what they do, it is wonderful.
He's
I can't imagine.
Wizard.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Oh, and the listeners can't see, but Andy had, it would be a maniacal laugh if he was verbal, but he had the little mwahahas and the hand and the twirling of the mustache going on. Well, we are out of time, and I'm bummed out we're out of time, but I am so happy that you came on today. This was an exciting show. I was excited, so... thank you very much, Andy and David and Olivia.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come back well again. Done. Oh, yes, we get a clapping from the audience today. That was The Vortex with The Tempest, an aerial tale, opening this weekend, April 29th, and running through May 14th at the Vortex Theater. For more information, you may visit vortexrep.org. Back. That was some Tempest score that I had found from another show, which I don't know, it kind of intrigued me in a weird way. It was like a harpsichord. But I'm gonna
yeah, we're bringing that in.
Go through you brought yes. We're gonna go through, I have one little local thing real quick. The Game of Life improvised musicals from Girls, running now through the 30th at the Institution Theater. For more information, ggg.austinimprov.com. And then I wanted to do Today in Theater History, because there is some good
today
stuff.
Today in Theater History.
I know. It's
my
favorite. It's Anne Chicalella's favorite segment, and there was some
nerds. Come on,
good,
Bob, you're one of these. We know
good,
it.
Because we were there.
From your girlfriend.
Good stuff in here. And, oh my gosh, where did my glasses go?
Oh, well.
All right.
Can't work without them.
This is going to be interesting. Do you see them? Oh, Tracy's handing me his. I thought they were on my head. I do that a lot. Tracy, you and I are different. So, today is the birthday of playwright August Wilson from 1945. He got those Pulitzer Prizes for Fences and Piano Lesson.
Right.
1978, 5th of July, played off Broadway.
Oh, I played
with,
in that.
Did you play in that?
Not
with,
that
this is the version with William Hurt. And it got revived again in 1980. Oh, I have an extra pair in my bag. I'll figure it out. I love that everyone's looking for glasses. 1981, Woody Allen returned to Broadway for the first time in more than a decade with the play The Floating Light Bulb. Danny Aiello and B. Arthur were in it. How do you not love B?
We love B, but we don't know. Bob and I don't even really know The Floating Light Bulb.
I don't know The Floating Light Bulb.
It's going to come back to Austin. You know it. Come on, Bob.
So, it will, yeah.
Norman, would you do The Floating Light Bulb?
You know, he's probably like, and I'm already thinking about it. My favorite, I saw this version. It still to this day is one of my favorite versions of Sweet Charity, Bob Fosse's last show he worked on before he passed, 1986, starring one Debbie Allen and one B.B. Newworth before anyone knew who B.B. was.
Wow.
Michael Rupert was actually also in it too. 1997, Cy Coleman opened The Life, the musical about prostitutes. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound exciting, but the music is awesome. 2000, Contact moved. Moved right after Contact opened, and then they had The Music Man open. Ran $6.99.
I like Contact.
699 performances. 2008, Frances McDormand, Morgan Freeman, and Peter Gallagher were in The Country Girl. As a revival directed by Mike Nichols. I'm telling you, this was a good Today in Theater History.
Yeah.
And I cut out a lot. And then, of course, 2011 was the revival of The Normal Heart, with Joe Mantonello, Ellen Barkin, and John Benjamin Hickey.
It won everything, didn't it?
It did win everything. It should win everything.
Oh, totally.
That piece is so great. The HBO movie they made was great. Wow. So we had some birthdays. I'm going to do a yesterday birthday because she is a Texan and she is the bomb one, Carol Burnett.
No.
Bon anniversaire. I am also going to give the birthday Jack Cole, 1914, Jack Klugman. Lisa, I believe that's your buddy and friend. Alan Palooka, Judy Carney, Ari Grainer, and Playbill.com, I have a bone to pick with you. It's Patrick Page's birthday, and you did not put him in Playbill.com.
What?
Right?
Whoa.
That's just wrong on so many levels.
Error.
So I'm letting everyone know, Patrick Page, it's your birthday. And of course, we had opening the week with one Willie Shakes, and we shall close the week with one Willie Nelson. So I'm going to play just a really quick song for 2 seconds from Sweet Charity. There's got to be something better than this, people.
There's got to be something better than
this. I love that. You know, there is no recorded version with from 86 with Debbie Allen and Bebe Noar. That
Lincoln
is
Center
raw.
Library.
Yeah, well, I know that, but there's nowhere for me to go and get it. And I sadly live in Austin, so I won't be there this afternoon. But I'm going to welcome now the Austin Shakespeare. And actually, I'm gonna put a throw out to Amy Layton, who just creeped on in here. Because she thought she was getting out of being in here. But hello, Amy Layton, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm going to do a shout out here, too, and talk to you guys here with Austin Shakespeare and one Shakespeare in the Park coming up. And this summer, I love that you took this turn this summer, Anne, and you were doing Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very exciting. And we have some folks from the cast here, Helen Marino, Jamie Parker, and Evan Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello. So, all right, Anne, if someone's been living under a rock and doesn't know about this show, give me the nickel and dime tour real quick.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think this is a great first Shakespeare for people to come and see. Meaning.
Because it's a very
The
American
story
psycho.
Is very. Did you hear that, Nicole? Said it's very American Psycho.
It's a blood budget.
This one straight plot, there's no subplots. It's short, it's straightforward, and it really is gripping in the sense of action, action, action. Now, for the children, I will say, absolutely, the first half from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, the witches are pretty fabulous.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you that they are the black witches in the first act and the white witches in the second act. And I'll let you figure out what that means when you join us. But we've gotten some terrific designers working on the show. It's going to look great. But it is the story, really, of a man who was a great military hero. And we're doing it modern dress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And his wife and circumstances, the weird sisters, the witches, suggest that he might want to consider upping his position by killing the king.
You know, why not?
And that's just the beginning.
Falling.
That's just the beginning of the story. And indeed, I asked Helen to read a little bit of that setup. So whenever you want to do that.
Oh, yeah. If you just lead it right into it, then yes, Helen. Why don't you give
us a little about what you just got in the letter. You're not going to do the letter. But
right.
What you just read.
Okay. So he has just, he basically sent me an email letter, whatever.
Yes, I forced her to do it on the iPad.
There was a fight, but she won. Basically saying that, you know, talking about his encounter with the witches and that, you know, they made this prediction that he was going to be the Thane of Cawdor. He became the Thane of Cawdor. Sorry. I'm
slow down.
Well, I saw her look at the
clock. Don't worry about me. You do what you got to do.
Anyway, basically saying they have predicted him that he will be king hereafter. And so she wants to sort of rev up the process a bit.
So you're by yourself.
So I'm by myself.
Having a moment.
Having just closed the iPad. Glamis thou art, and Cawdor, and shalt be what thou art promised. Yet do I fear thy nature. It's too full of the milk of human kindness to catch the nearest way. Thou wouldst be great, and not without ambition, but without the illness should attend it. What thou wouldst highly, that wouldst thou holily. Wouldst not play false, and yet wouldst strongly win. Thou'dst have great glams, that which cries, thus thou must do, if thou have it. And that which rather thou dost fear to do, than wish should be
undone. Oh, hide thee hither, that I may pour my spirits in thine ear, and chastise with the valor of my tongue all that impedes thee from the golden round, which fate and metaphysical aid doth seem to have thee crowned withal.
Oh, thank you. That's some good stuff. We're a clapping audience today. We're just like Prairie Home Companion.
Well, then the Mark Puhey sneaks up on her and gives her a big smoocher.
Yeah, we love
so
that.
So Mark Puhey is our Macbeth again, and he was our Othello.
Hi, Mark.
He's pretty fab. He's working for Dell right now, but
he's in his office in his cubicle. He's listening, and he's giggling away.
But we brought a couple of actors.
I know. I wanted to talk to Evan and Jamie. So Evan, Jamie, why don't you tell me a little bit about the roles that you're playing and how your experience has been? And you know what? You could pull these mics right up and get up close and personal. They're lonely.
Well, I'm playing King Duncan. I get knocked off in the first part of the play. Thanks to Macbeth and Mrs. M. He's a very good king, generous king, a little naive to a fault, which leads to his downfall. He sometimes has some problems judging character.
Don't we all?
But it's a wonderful role. I was watching Mark last night and was just mesmerized by what he was doing. I'm having a great time. Shakespeare in the Park in May, beautiful May evenings.
Perfect weather.
A blanket, a little fried chicken or whatever one wants to bring to the picnic. It's just a marvelous evening, and there's just something very special about Shakespeare in the Park.
I totally agree.
Well, I think it was made to be performed outside, you know, so
yeah.
There's really something beautiful about seeing it out there. I'm Evan, and I'm playing the the Bloody Sergeant. Then I'm playing a guy called Angus, who's a lord, and then one of the murderers who does some murdering.
Oh, the murderer.
So, how very...
Fun role.
Yeah, I know. It all keeps going back to Patrick Bateman. So, do you have a blood budget, Anne?
We don't have a separate budget, but we have a fabulous person who's not only creating blood, but creating some body parts. And Evan will have a little bit of gore on himself.
Neatly chiseled American psycho body part.
Lovely.
Well, they could audition and send their resume in.
Well, you know, in Shakespeare's time, they used real animal guts.
That's right.
So then we
go
to the butcher and get some stuff and throw it on the
stage.
So,
Evan, you have to be really thankful that that's not what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as chiseled as the American psycho guys, but we make up for it with the blood and gore, so.
Luckily, I bleed off stage.
They've got the mob behind the thing. Well, I think, I honestly think this is really, really exciting because I think it's a different type of Shakespeare show that you normally do in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shows children and families, because you know I'm all about the families going to the theater, getting the youngins in, loving it. I think it shows them a different perspective of theater. Everything with Shakespeare, it's like Prince. It's timely. Like, it never ages, and it just works no matter where we are.
You know, we have a psychotherapist coming in to talk about PTSD and what that means to the play. We also have some children in the show who are, dying to be murdered.
That's true.
You know, we did Medea recently, and they were like, we want to be dead on stage. So this year I was like, not only are these kids going to be dead on stage, they're going to get killed on stage.
Oh my God.
So, you know, they are thrilled. Depending on how old your kids are and what their sensibilities are, that does happen in part two.
That's what I was going to say. Would you say this is a G, PG-13, kind of in between your own rating?
No, I mean, I think 8 and 9-year-olds could be fine with it. I really do.
Yeah, I would say that.
I remember when we did one of the most difficult shows we ever did, Winter's Tale in the Park, and I was sitting next to a 4-year-old, and we were watching. And at one point, Leontes talks about wanting to kill this baby that he doesn't think is his. And the 4-year-old turns to me and says, "Why would you want to kill that baby?"
Aww.
And I thought, he identified with that baby. He's like, he's stamping on, because he puts his foot like over the bassinet. But it's amazing, because Shakespeare played to this wide audience.
I think as a kid, you're uninhibited by the text and the language,
uh-huh.
and you read everything so much clearer. Like adults, I think, think Shakespeare is harder than it is. And it's like, just listen. It
just
all
listen.
Really
Let it wash you
makes
and you
sense
will be fine.
Still to this day.
That was a beautiful show, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And you know, beautiful. Bob has been both a director for Austin Shakespeare, and he was the father in Much Ado, which is the first show that I did for Austin Shakespeare. And I think it's time to bring Much Ado back, Bob.
Let's do it.
Oh, Bob.
I'm old enough now.
Bob's getting gigs on air today. Go, Bob. Well, we are out of time, sadly, but I am. Thank you so much for coming in
today.
Thanks
for having us on.
To celebrate Willie Week. Shakespeare and Nelson.
Oh, Willie.
Exciting. So that was Anne Ciccolella, Helen Marino, Jamie Parker, Evan Shaw from Austin Shakespeare's Macbeth, playing at the Zilker Hillside Theater for Shakespeare in the Park. It starts next week, May 5th, running through May 29th. For more information, you may visit austinshakespeare.org. And this is from the Scottish musical, the Brooklyn Children's Theater, and it's called He's Dead. We are back, and we are going to jump right into this exciting interview that we had earlier this morning. Tracy and I were able to speak to Shantae Carmel. Bob and I got to go last night and see Motown the Musical. Can I just give it like a Jersey fist pump? Oh, my God. Raucous, roaring good time. But let's talk to Shantae and hear about the show. Well, Tracy and I are so lucky this afternoon to have with us a cast member from Motown the Musical, Miss Shantae Carmel.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Shantae. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Well, first, I just have to say, what an awesome show.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Really just such a good time. I think this is one of those shows that you don't have to be a musical theater lover.
No.
You don't even have to be a music lover.
You
it's just
have to
a
be alive
life lover.
In the world.
Yeah. And you go in and you have a really, really good time. Everybody was singing. Everybody was leaning over and talking to each other.
Yeah.
There was constant movement in the audience. And it's that kind of constant movement you want. People were clapping. Mm-hmm. People were joining in on songs. Mm-hmm. Like the whole beats. It was what an experience. So why don't we tell listeners, if they've been living under a rock and have never heard of Motown, not just the musical, but Motown in general.
Yes.
If you could give them a nickel and dime tour real quick, what would you say about this show?
I would say, you know, just think of the best artists in the world, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Marvin Gaye, and there you have Motown. I mean, basically Motown was started by Berry Gordy, founded by Berry Gordy, and he wanted to create music for everyone. He broke down so many barriers doing that, and he created artists as though they were cars in a manufacturer.
That's how he explains it in
the show. He worked at a place where they produced cars, and he basically turned out groups the same exact way. He put them together. He groomed them before they stepped out, and by the time they stepped out in front of that light, they were so well polished, everybody wanted to buy them. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it was great. Motown music is great. It speaks to everyone. Great lyrics.
And this show really does pack in a lot of tunes. This is not typical where you get 15 songs
no,
or 20
about
songs.
60 songs.
Yeah.
60 Motown songs that they get in there throughout the entire show.
Which is really, really impressive. And it's funny because here's something about Barry. Every single song, you can relate to something.
Yeah.
Every single song has a story. It's not like, oh, I happen to know this one.
Yeah.
You really do know, like,
yeah,
all of them. So if you had, can you pick a favorite song? I mean, I don't know if I would be able to do that.
Yeah. Marvin Gaye.
Mm.
What's Going On?
Mm-hmm.
I can listen to that song. And I hear this song, you know, obviously many, many times. But when that song comes on the radio, still, I mean, just it hits me in my heart every time. I never get tired of it. Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? Just because of what the song represented, remembering what was going on during that time period, how it was almost before its time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how it's so relatable to today. The things going on today in the world,
Isn't it crazy that we watched something from 50 years ago, 40 years ago, and I'm like,
and you can apply it. That is a tried and true song right there. If you can still apply it to what's happening in today, it's timeless. Obviously, many favorites, but that's the one. The lyrics that are, it gets me every time.
So, and you get to play a few different roles here. And
I do.
I have the list. I am prepared. So let me see. I have to put my old lady glasses on, though. So you get to play Edna Anderson, yes. Martha Reeves, yes. and Marvlett.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So that's kind of a lot of fun. Again, would you be able to pick a favorite? I'm all about pick
of
a
my
favorite.
Characters? Of my – oh, well, I sing Dancing in the Street, which is an all-time favorite. Yeah. So you can't go wrong with Dancing in the Street.
No, you really can't. Yeah. You really can't.
I mean, it's fun. It brings everybody together. Let's have fun. Let's dance. I remember the movie Sister Act.
Yes.
You know where, yep. when Sister Act came out and she's trying to like fundraise and, you know, it brought Dancing in the Street probably to, you know, I guess that movie came out in the late 90s.
Late 90s, yeah. I think, yeah.
So, you know, it brought it to a whole new generation.
Yeah.
And then the, so it's just,
again, it shows that music is timeless.
Timeless.
It's funny with Prince's passing. I made when Motown coming to town. I did say, "I go." Berry Gordy was the Prince without the performing. He made timeless music.
Timeless.
He just made it a different way. But God bless him for that. And we should let listeners know Berry Gordy's been behind this and a part of this. And
oh, he is my
shared
boss.
His story. This isn't like someone saliciously writing something. Like no. He really was hands on. This is his baby. He's given his blessing. So, did you get to work with him?
Here's the thing. Everyone pretty much auditions for Barry. Like, that's your last audition.
That's great.
Like, he does approve every single person that comes into this show. Sometimes he's on the West Coast, and some people are on the East Coast, so they send it via video. I was actually on the West Coast, and he lives in Bel Air. So my last audition was at his house, his estate. Can't call it a house. His estate in Bel Air. Me, him, his assistant Nancy, and an accompanist in his living room.
Oh, that's a moment.
Wow.
So
That's really a moment.
It was the moment. And so after I get done singing, he looks at me. I sing Dance in the Street through the second time. He looks back. He sits back. He looks at me. He goes, "Okay, you won." And it's just like, did Berry Gordy
just say
that to me? I mean, we're talking about the same guy who discovered Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Diana Ross,
yeah.
Smokey Robinson, Marvin Gaye, The Temptations, The Four Tops. He put these groups together. Like, these are some of the best groups, the Supremes of all time. And he just said yes to me. So he's very hands-on, which I love. And he comes to visit. He comes out to the show. He still gives us notes.
That's exciting. So he does come on the tour and everything, too?
He was in D.C. We did a big thing in D.C. Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back again in some city right before we go to Broadway. And then, obviously, he'll probably... And they also just opened the London Company. So
yes.
He was very active and putting that together and, you know, reworking some things in the script so things will apply to people overseas. Because some jokes don't translate.
Yeah.
No, that's
you
true.
Know,
well, some words mean different things too. So
exactly.
That's part.
You know, you want to. He's able to taper the show to wherever we are, which is a beautiful thing. I mean, we're still getting rewrites and little tweaks all the time, and I love it. It's constantly evolving, constantly getting better and better and better. Which, you know, for me, I'm like, I don't know how I could get better. This is an amazing show already, but I love it. He's very hands on. Yeah.
So right now you're at Bass Concert Hall, and this is kind of exciting for Austin, because this majority of this cast is going, this show is remounting on Broadway in July, mm-hmm. and the majority of this cast is going to be in that show, correct?
So New York is the last stop on our tour.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this will be the cast that you'll see on Broadway.
Okay, that's pretty exciting, Austin.
So exciting.
That is just a little tidbit you can learn.
Yeah.
If you're interested or you can't get up there, you're getting the same thing.
You're getting officially the Broadway company of Motown the Musical.
What a special treat. And I'll tell you right now, you surely could tell. It was really just a great show.
Oh, thank you so much.
And were you impressed by Austin's talent when they came on stage?
They sang so amazing. That guy was amazing.
We know that, man. His wife.
Who is he?
It's Judy Arnold's husband, and his wife, Judy Arnold, she can sing too. You should have both of them together can.
We were not expecting that.
I was talking. I'm going to bring you in here. Amy's sitting here with us. I was asking Amy, I go, I wonder how they felt about that being their first night in Austin. Was the cast like, oh my.
We love it.
You did?
We love it. It's so amazing.
Well, Judy and her husband sing in a gospel choir here locally in Austin.
Oh,
and Judy has done
a lot of theater,
a lot of musical theater in this town. And so it was a special treat.
It was amazing.
She was already blowing up my phone this morning going, girl.
It was one. It,
Ellipse,
you know,
girl.
And I was like, yeah.
At that point in the show, I'm actually on stage during that moment.
Oh,
probably
wow.
No one notices me because I'm in a different wig and dress. I'm the Eddie Kendrick singers backed up Diana Ross in that moment. And we're on stage, so it's new every night. It's not a moment that we stage or anything like that. So we don't know who we're going to get. And every single night is different. And it's a guessing game. Like, are they going to be singing?
I was saying that to Amy.
Some people get up. They don't know the lyrics. It's great, though. We love it. It's such a beautiful impromptu moment. But we love it. Sometimes kids get up and they're so cute. And I love that moment. But also, the house lights come up. So we get to see the entire audience, and we actually get to see that moment without giving away too much. You know, that very special moment at the end of Reach Out and Touch. And it's heart-wrenching for us to see that whole movement of the audience happen. It's great. It's beautiful every night. It's probably one of my favorite points in the show next to, you know, what's going on.
Well, yeah. I was just happy you got a nice Austin welcome.
Oh, my God. The crowd was amazing, too.
Well, I believe we like music and we like arts here in Austin. So when you give us something good, we'll let you know.
They told us.
We are not afraid.
Everybody in the cast was excited to come here. This is my first time here. Hey, Austin.
Yay.
And they were like, no, Austin is the town. I'm like, really?
Yeah, it really is. It's a special place.
You guys are showing out. It's amazing. We love it. Keep ringing it.
Well, I hope the rest of the city knows that they have some expectations to live up to from last night's performance. Well, Shantae, I cannot say thank you enough for coming in here to chat with us today and talk about Motown, and bless you on your ventures. I know my mother will be in the audience in July, so, you know, little Liz Barrett,
yay,
she'll be whooping it up and getting down again. She loves this show. So, gee gosh, she loves this show. That was Shantae Carmel with Motown the Musical with Broadway in Austin, performing now at Bass Concert Hall through May 1st. For more information, you may visit broadwayinaustin.com. But I have to quickly say, I opened a gift from Bob Tolero really quickly while we had that going on. Bob Tolero gave me his shroud of Hedwig. And if you know what that is, Hedwig, and this would be one Neil Patrick Harris's shroud, may I add, wipes his little face, has the Jesus shroud, and throws it in the audience. And Bob Tolero caught it, and he wrapped it all up in the playbill and gave it to me. And I don't even know what to say. I'm verklempt. I'm touching it. I love it.
You're easy.
You, Bob Tolero.
You're so easy, dear.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure, love.
We will be back. Lisa will be back next week. Lisa, I miss you. I need to make a theme song for that. I want to say thank you again to Tracy. Thank you, Bob. You can get more information offstageonair.com. And we'll see you next week.